The following program is pre-recorded. The views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of Gila Mimbres Community Radio and belong solely to the program hosts and guests. You're listening to Gila Mimbres Community Radio, KURU 89.1 FM in Silver City, New Mexico, and online at KURU891.org. You are listening to the Equity Hour, where the political is personal, a monthly show. The Equity Hour is part of the Kindred Continuum series and airs on the first Monday of the month at 10 a.m. and is replayed on the air the following Sunday at 4 p.m. I'm your co-host, Cindy Renee Provencio.
And I'm your co-host, Kit West.
And we are interviewing Dr. Barbara Mora, retired pediatrician. Dr. Mora, can you tell us a little bit about yourself? And since this is called Where the Political is Personal, we would like to know more about your relationship with homelessness.
Yes, hi, I'm glad to be here. I'm a retired pediatrician, as you mentioned. I've lived here in Silver City for 40 years. I've raised my three sons here. I'm well acquainted with the community. I love this community. I'm happy to be involved now that I'm retired with working with the homeless population, specifically with SPIN, supporting people in need.
Awesome. And how did you come to be involved with the homeless situation in Silver City?
Well, it's a very personal answer. I grew up in a large extended family, wonderful childhood in rural Maine. But being a large family, there were also a lot of challenges in my extended family with mental illness, addiction, and incarceration. So I am very familiar on a personal level with people very dear to me who've struggled with these challenges. So that naturally brings me to care, you know, to have compassion for other people who are struggling with these same issues. I am actually grateful for that, not that my family members have struggled, but that it's brought me to a position of better understanding of what those struggles are and how we can work towards bettering their lives. Oh, and I think you asked me, how did it get started?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. That was by accident. And let's see, I had met Christina Wolford at the time. She's now Christina Wolford Castillo. But I met her when she was working at the Gospel Mission, and I was volunteering there. And she was either already a social worker or just becoming a social worker. And I met her there, and we had some great conversations. And she asked me one day if I would be willing to be on the board of this new nonprofit that she wanted to call SPIN, Supporting People in Need. And I said yes. I was very, very encouraged by everything she had to say. And as we started, that was in February of 2017, so SPIN has now been in existence for 8.5 years. Mm. And we originally started out with the issue of permanent supportive housing. Christy had attended some statewide workshops on permanent supportive housing, and this was with the help of Priscilla Lucero. I want to give a shout out to Priscilla because she was the local person. She's with the Council of Governments who brought this to Christy's attention. And so Christy attended many of these workshops in Albuquerque to learn about how to bring this work here locally. So permanent supportive housing is how we started. SPIN has grown tremendously since then in the 8.5 years. And we're just about to bring to fruition our original intention, permanent supportive housing, a 30-unit apartment housing that will be on the bypass road, 32nd Street bypass road. And I believe they're just breaking ground at that site this week. So that's very exciting.
That's amazing.
8.5 years later?
Yes. Well, there have been a lot of challenges, as there is everywhere. Mm-hmm. And we were informed immediately by the development company, Blue Line Development Company, out of, well, you know, I think they are out of Montana or somewhere in mm-hmm. another state. Mm-hmm. But they've been hugely helpful because they've been the company that's helped other areas develop these permanent supportive housing units also. Mm. And so you might ask, well, what is permanent?
I was just going to ask you.
Okay, but I'm ready.
You're ready. You're ahead of me. Yeah.
Well, permanent supportive housing is based on the umbrella concept of housing first, so that people with the challenges, like I was speaking about, mental illness of all types, addiction, incarceration, who often find themselves homeless, in order to get some quality back into their lives, you have to start with housing. Sometimes it's simply shelter. Like, we do have a homeless shelter here, but we don't need more homeless shelters in this country. We need homeless shelters, but we need more permanent supportive housing. So with qualified individuals, people who they qualify by disability, extreme poverty, and homelessness. So that's the criteria of which they're able to be housed in permanent supportive housing units. And so these units are not temporary apartments. They're funded by the MFA, which I don't completely understand. The finances not being my strong point, but that is the funding base for this. And they live there. These are then their permanent homes as long as they want to live there. And they're nice, small apartments. And there will also be some community gathering spaces, so some common spaces. And then the supportive services are on site. And so this is the
staff
model.
Is always on site.
Staff is yeah. there, and also security. Mm-hmm. And this is a model that's been proven, it's evidence-based, that it really assists people by getting them housed first and then attending to what their other needs are. So the supportive staff then, you know, has done some intake to find out what they need, what kind of therapy services, what kind of medical services, dental services, et cetera. And then they live there. And so this is what gets people off the street. And this tends, by bringing down their stress level, they are able to start to make changes in their lives. But until, you know, when anyone's living on the street, they're living in a condition of chronic stress. And they don't know where they're going to sleep that night, where they're going to eat. Are they safe? Do they have access to showers or even toilets or any of the care that they need, like medical and dental? So getting them housed, getting them supportive care, we can get on with addressing what their needs are. And this is the model nationally that is effective. So that's what we're doing.
Good. To give our listeners a point of reference, how was it before the Housing First model? I mean, why is Housing First a departure? What was the norm before that? And why do we know that this is so much more successful?
Right. I would say it was the previous paradigm,
right,
which reflected people's attitudes out of their own misunderstanding of the huge challenges for people with mental illness and addiction, and often that also goes along with incarceration at some point. But the attitudes were that they should get cleaned up first, get a job, and then they'd be eligible for housing and get in recovery, and then they'd be eligible for housing. It doesn't work that way. It's almost zero, you know, very low likelihood that a person without supportive care and housing is going to be able to do that. If you're living on the streets and you're disheveled and maybe missing some teeth, often missing some teeth, and have behaviors for, you know, out of untreated mental illness issues, it's really hard to get a job. And especially these days, you don't have a computer and no resume. It's very difficult to get a job right off the street. And so we have panhandlers. But I did learn, you know, I learned so much by doing this work. Someone said to me that, you know, when you're panhandling, a lot of these people out there panhandling, which is not so much our clients, but anyone panhandling, is not shoplifting at that point in time. Is they've made a choice. It's actually a decision in the right direction to just ask for some help instead of stealing. Yeah, there's another client that pointed that out to me so that we're not so judgmental. Yeah.
Yeah. So the previous system sounds very judgmental.
Yes.
It sounds like it's a reward. If you jump through all these hoops and you prove that you're just like us, then you can have housing instead of giving people what they need to even begin.
To begin, right. And then stay supportive throughout that process.
Right,
Yes.
That's wonderful. So that has been, that was your intention at the very beginning, right? And now it's coming to fruition. But what else do you do at SPIN? Do you still do stuff at SPIN these days?
I do. I started out as a board member. After 7 years, I decided to retire, although I'm still very active with SPIN. I really enjoy much more just doing volunteer work. Being on a board is a lot of, it takes a lot of time, takes a lot of energy, and, you know, always worrying, you know, always feeling responsible. And so I much more enjoy it, volunteering. I help out, I co-facilitate one of our dayhab classes on Thursday afternoons. I sometimes also help out at the Horse Rescue Ranch. Where
sounds like fun.
It is fun. And our clients also, because we collaborate with the Horse Rescue Ranch, the End of the Road Ranch. And I also bring people on tours, and maybe this is a good point in time to talk about that. The best way to learn about what's really happening with SPIN, supporting people in need, is to allow me to bring you on a tour, including you two lovely ladies. I'd love to do, I know you've learned a lot just because we've been talking, but there's something about seeing it and walking in. We start, we go into this shelter. I choose weekdays because that's when most of our staff is there and other programs are happening, so you really get to see. We go into this shelter and you will see some of our clients, some of our staff, some of our volunteers. You'll notice that it smells like someone's making lunch because they are, and it smells good. We go in and we visit the laundry room where people's clothing donations are kept. And we go out and see the garden out back. And sometimes our volunteers are there along with clients who are now learning about gardening. It's very therapeutic. Being outdoors, working together, have common projects. And then we go from there to our admin building where a lot of our housing programs work out of. And our dayhab. Dayhab is another word for intensive outpatient programming, IOP, right. And that's and the one that's being offered now, it's a standard curriculum that one of our staff members oversees, and it's in all three counties. And it's a 10-week program. And it's based on mental health, building resiliency, working on coping strategies, dealing with some of the symptoms, common symptoms that are, our clients face, and working together in very interactive ways to assist them in coming to terms, you know, with what they need. And other programs. And we then visit two of our recovery homes. SPIN has three recovery homes.
Like you said that you were in three counties. So this gives our listeners an idea of the vastness of
SPIN. Yeah, we're much bigger. We're far more than a homeless shelter.
And which counties are those?
Grant County, Hidalgo County, and Luna County.
Okay.
So our recovery homes, we have one for men here in Silver City and one for women here in Silver City and one for men in Deming. We don't yet have a recovery home in Lordsburg, but we're hoping to. The recovery homes are mainly for people coming out of difficult circumstances, primarily incarceration. When someone's been incarcerated and then they're out, usually on parole, unless they have a safe, supportive home, the likelihood of their returning back to prison is high within the first 3 months. So this is necessary all over the country, and it is happening in many other places. We hear of a long waiting list for the prison systems know about the recovery homes, and they would love it if people would not be coming back into incarceration. Right. It costs a lot of money every time someone's incarcerated, and it's difficult, and it's more and more traumatic, you know, every time. So these are sober living environments in our recovery homes.
You are listening to Gila Mimbres Community Radio, KURU 89.1 FM in Silver City, New Mexico, and online at KURU891.org. You are listening to the Equity Hour, where the political is personal. And I'm your co-host, Cindy Renee Provencio, and we are interviewing Dr. Barbara Mora, retired pediatrician and volunteer at our local SPIN.
Hi. Okay, we're back. So, yeah, we were talking about the recovery homes and the necessity for them. And so this is a sober living environment. Our peer support staff are there weekdays to work with our clients, and they do such a good job. I'm so proud of all our staff. So they work with the clients, giving them a routine. You know, they've had routines when they've been incarcerated, but not very pleasant, I think, a lot of the time. But so they're given routines during the day and living together, you know, cooking together, having responsibilities. Our staff
isn't it a peer-led?
And it's now a peer-led process in combination with the peer staff with the clients. And they love that because first time in some time for many of them, now they have a real feeling, a real control over their lives. And it's not always easy because it's difficult for some people to build that trust again. But it's been highly effective. And in terms of comparing our recovery homes with others, we're doing very well. It's not 100% that our clients are successfully transitioned out into independent living, but it's much, much higher than if they didn't have that supportive environment.
Do you have any percentages on that? Like what your success rate is, more or less?
You know, it depends because month to month it varies.
It shifts, yeah.
It shifts, but I've heard anywhere from like 60 to 80%, depending on the month. Yeah. So that's good.
That's
and compared to
very good.
State or national averages, we're doing fine. Yeah.
And isn't there a women's
Women's
house?
Yeah, we have a women's recovery house here. Now, for women, sometimes it's incarceration. Sometimes the difficult circumstance for women is coming out of domestic violence. Because if they stay at a domestic violence shelter, this is true many places, including here, there's a time limit on how long they can be there because the demand is high. Mm-hmm. So we have a close relationship also with the domestic violence shelter, and they often will refer clients to us because some women, they need a safe place to live a longer period of time so they don't go back to an abusive home environment. And sometimes they have kids too. So sometimes we've even had some kids staying
the
there
same
too.
Time. So that's one of your collaborators, the safe houses.
Yes, the safe houses, yeah.
Do you have other collaborators?
We have a lot of other collaborators. I hope I don't leave any out because every time I, you know, when we talked about it earlier and then I thought of another one. So we collaborate with other local resources that take care of some food insecurity here. And so our client population for the Gospel Mission or the Commons, the St. Francis Food Pantry, and some of the others, they're their same client base. There's some fluidity in this population, but we're all serving vulnerable people in need. The Lotus Center has been very, very helpful. In fact, Jeff Goen has even come and helped at our DAHAB, our intensive outpatient program, with mindfulness training. Yeah.
Good for him.
So, oh, he's wonderful. Yeah, there's so many wonderful
people. He's my boss, you know.
Oh, he's your boss. I didn't know that.
I work at the Lotus Center. Yeah.
But also Single Socks, which is also, yeah, one of his programs. So I had no idea until recently that how much money Single Socks puts out for food security in this town. It's hundreds of thousands of dollars, and SPIN is one of the recipients for which we're very, very grateful. We collaborate with the Gospel Mission. I mentioned End of the Road Ranch.
What's the safe house? Refugio?
El Refugio, yes. Yeah. And probably others. And, of course, the other wonderful people in this community are the people who do believe in what we're doing and are donors, financial donors. Also, people donate gently used clothing, sometimes furniture and appliances. When our residents come out of the recovery homes and are ready to have independent housing, you know, and jobs, they need everything. They need furniture. They need appliances. They need plates and cups and microwaves and bedding. And yeah, and so I'm just very grateful to all the help that we get here in town.
So you really feel supported by the community in Silver City?
Yes, we really do. We really do. I mean, we've been criticized at times, but we try to not react and just have the attitude that not everybody understands where vulnerable people are coming from and what their challenges are. There's many, many good people here. Mm-hmm. I've taken many people on tours, dozens now over the last several years, and have witnessed people coming on a tour and saying, wow, I had no idea everything that's happening. So it's hard to say in words or to write it down. It's better to come see and meet some people.
That being said, do you want to talk a little bit about some of the common myths and sort of bust those?
Yes.
Do you want this?
Yeah.
So I have a...
I think I'll read it.
Yeah.
So one of our staff members put together this list about common myths, because over and over again, we hear from just people, sometimes even our friends will say, well, oh, I heard that SPIN is bussing people in from all over, so we'll have more homeless people here. And I always think, why would we do that? So that is a myth, I'll say right now. That's the biggest one that continues to circulate. So I'm going to read off these myths, and they're also available. Actually, if you go to our website, spinhousingnm.org, you'll be able to find these myths on there, but I think for now I'll read them. Myth number one, SPIN is just a homeless shelter. Fact, SPIN is a comprehensive behavioral health organization offering recovery and permanent supportive housing, mental health therapy, case management, disability advocacy, in-home services, DAHAB, and intensive outpatient programming. Myth number two, people must be sober or mentally stable before receiving housing. Fact, SPIN uses the housing first model, which provides housing without preconditions like sobriety or treatment compliance. Housing is a starting point for recovery, not a reward. Myth number three, SPIN only helps single men. Fact, SPIN's seasonal overnight shelter serves men, women, children, and unaccompanied minors of all genders and ages. A little side note here. We started out with that name for the shelter, seasonal overnight shelter, but we're now open 365 days a year, 24 hours a day, every day of the week. Myth number four, SPIN refuses service to people who can't pay. Fact, SPIN accepts Medicaid and provides services regardless of ability to pay. Myth number five, SPIN is bringing homeless people into Silver City from other areas. Fact, most SPIN clients are from Grant County. While they occasionally serve people from nearby towns like Deming or Lordsburg, which lack shelters, those individuals are returned to their communities once housing is secured. Myth number six, SPIN steals or mismanages clients' money. Fact, there is no evidence or public record of SPIN being involved in financial misconduct. SPIN provides representative payee services under federal guidelines and is one of the few agencies in the United States that does not charge a fee for this service.
Do you want to elaborate on that just a little bit? What does that mean exactly?
Okay, yeah, the rep payee service is done all over the country.
What is it?
For a client who may have a source of income, like disability income or other source of income, but has been deemed by the courts to be not competent to manage their own money, then they are granted a rep payee.
Okay.
And so we have people who are certified and trained, registered to be rep payees, and those clients are assigned to us. And so the rep payee person works individually with each client. I think we have over 30 right now in, you know, between all three counties. And these are what would bring someone to be incompetent would be mental illness, cognitive impairment, whether it's from traumatic brain injury or developmental disability, but people who are not able to manage their own finances. Now, sometimes they graduate out of that, and that also is then deemed, our rep payee person doesn't make that determination. That's determined by, I think it's Social Security that determines.
And then returns to the client.
Yeah, then they can, yeah, or right. Sometimes another family member or someone is able to take on that position. But very often it's because they don't have a family member, someone to do that for them. Mm. Okay. Myth number seven, the SPIN shelter is unsafe. Fact, SPIN enforces strict safety rules. No violence, alcohol, drugs, or weapons are allowed. While some neighborhood concerns have been raised, these are community-wide issues related to broader systemic gaps in mental health and addiction services. Myth number eight, SPIN increases homelessness in Silver City. Fact, SPIN does not attract homelessness, it responds to it. Local agencies estimate 120 households in Grant County are actually unhoused. SPIN provides stabilizing services that reduce long-term homelessness. Myth number nine, SPIN has caused an increased use of first responder resources. Fact, there is no data supporting this claim. In fact, Housing First programs like SPIN's reduce emergency service use by providing stable housing and case management. The U.S. Interagency Council on Homelessness and studies published in journals like American Journal of Public Health have shown that Housing First programs lead to fewer emergency room visits, reduced hospitalizations, lower use of police and emergency management services.
So here for SPIN. Yeah.
I'm so glad when Harold put out this list for us, because we do hear about these myths, mm-hmm. and it's nice to have these facts to let people know about.
That's why I brought it up.
I thought,
well, this is a good opportunity to maybe dispel some of these myths.
Right.
Which, unfortunately, I think it's a very tricky situation, the homeless situation. I think it's, I don't know if you want to respond to that, but in nationally too, you know, even internationally, there's something threatening or something about the whole homeless situation and all sorts of different, sometimes very violent ideas about what to do about it that don't really help.
Right.
And so it's that.
You are listening to Gila Mimbres Community Radio, KURU 89.1 FM in Silver City, New Mexico, and online at KURU891.org. You are listening to the Equity Hour, where the political is personal. And we are interviewing Dr. Barbara Mora, retired pediatrician.
Yeah, we were just talking about the negativity that surrounds the homeless situation. And I was actually at a meeting today where someone was talking about San Francisco. Mm-hmm. And one person had lived there long before homelessness was an issue in San Francisco. The other person had lived there right in the middle of the worst of the homeless situation. And then another person had just been there recently and said, oh, but it's much better now, right? Because perhaps because of the Housing First initiatives that are going around the world, you know, around the country. I don't know. Mm-hmm. But it was sort of the trajectory of it that we, you know, maybe we're coming to a different kind of consciousness that this, the situation can be dealt with in new ways, like you're talking about.
I hope so. And, you know, it depends on which side of the fence, if you would, that you're looking at it. The homeless situation, it's a situation for unhoused people who have so many challenges in their lives that are not being addressed. The paucity of mental health services. We have some excellent mental health services right here in Silver City, but they're overwhelmed by the need. New Mexico, in general, has not enough mental health professionals. The cost of housing is astronomical now, and it's difficult for people, as many people know, to find jobs. Most households now that have two adults in the household have two incomes. It wasn't that way when I was growing up. This world has really changed. So there's so many factors that are driving this for people finding themselves unhoused. And again, once you're unhoused, getting housed is really tough.
Right.
Think about it. Even if you were to find a job, you'd have to have first and last month rent and deposits on all your utilities. And how many people have that?
Well, it's difficult for
people who are employed.
Right. Exactly. Even people who don't have those vulnerabilities have a really hard time. Housing is one of the hugest issues facing this country.
Right. The fastest growing portion of the homeless population is seniors. And I learned that statistic from the National Alliance to End Homelessness. I highly recommend anyone interested in this area go to that website. It's full of information. They do excellent research. You can archive all their articles. They have free webinars. They have handouts, which you can print out. That's where I got that Housing First printout.
It's a good
for
one.
For you. It's really good.
Yeah.
And so that's the National Alliance to End Homelessness. And that's where I got that fact, is that's the fastest growing portion of the homeless is the elderly. And when you think about it, very often, even in my age group, people are living now on fixed income, and it's suddenly not enough. If they've been renting and rents go up, sometimes the landlord will decide to sell their property, and the person has nowhere to go, can't find anything else. And if they've lost a spouse, now they're also on less income. And that person, you know, it's a lot easier when you got two adults helping each other get through the aging process.
Right.
And they have medical problems. And now maybe if they have trouble with their vision, like macular degeneration, they can't drive anymore. They can't get places. And if they don't have family or other close support, a lot of them end up on the street. And a lot of them are disabled and feeling desperate. And it's so sad.
Yeah.
And we have this here at our shelter here. We have a number of elderly people who just have nowhere to go.
And they might also be suffering from dementia. So then they don't, they're not really capable of even understanding what's going on.
Right. Yeah.
You know?
Yep.
So I think that's something that's underreported.
Oh, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because we tend to think of, you know, when people think of the homeless, they think of driving down, you know, Bullard Street here or any main, you know, places in other cities and seeing people in tents and people behaving in ways that are kind of frightening to people. And yes, that is part of it. But that's not the whole of it. There's so many stories yeah. that go along, and they're all different stories. Mm-hmm. You know, and many of the people here, sometimes Spin gets blamed for some people that are misbehaving in town. Those are very often people who are not accessing our Spin services. We have no authority over people. When people come, say, to the shelter, there is an intake so we can find out what are their needs, where are they at, can we offer them some services, but they're not always ready to participate in those services. But on a cold January night,
they come in.
They need yeah. a place to be. And so it's a starting point. And sometimes, you know, at the shelter, like every homeless shelter, it can be kind of loud, hard for people to sleep. Our staff are amazing. I'm so proud of them. We always have at least two people there, two staff people, 24/7.
So your idea of having people come in and go on tours and things like that is really good, because it sounds like part of it is just ignorance. Like, people don't know.
Yeah, they just
the
don't
population.
Know.
They don't know what they're
right.
looking at. They
right.
they think that it's just what they see occasionally downtown
right.
or in the ditch or something, and that's the whole story.
Yeah,
right. And these people are sometimes misbehaving.
Yeah.
Or if you're going for a walk in the big ditch, it can be scary.
Can be.
You know.
Although lately, with a group of friends, we've been meeting down at the Big Ditch Park, because it's beautiful fall weather, and mm-hmm. we meet down there over the lunch hour a couple times a month and talk about all kinds of stuff. And I know a number of the people down there that other people feel afraid of. Mm-hmm. I know them because they've been in the day hub class that I volunteer with, and I've seen them at the horse rescue ranch. I know their names. And so I feel totally comfortable. I go up and say, hey, how are you doing? It's good to see you again. Oh, you got a new bike. Tell me about it. Blah, blah, blah. And when, you know, and they know me and I know them. I feel safer with them than almost anywhere.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So they're just because they may look a little scary in some people's eyes. Maybe it's from my past experience, too, that I don't feel afraid. And, you know, addressing people just human to human really...
It really works.
Really opens up everybody. Everybody feels safer. And then also Charmaine Waite, who's been very involved mm-hmm. with the Main Street Project, I guess mm-hmm. that's what you call it, she pointed out to me that, and this is research, that all over the country, places where people are afraid to go, like parks that they say are, you know, overrun with homeless people, with more... that common citizens also use those spaces. Let's say like Gough Park,
right.
the Big Ditch, some of our other beautiful parks. The more that people use them, the safer it is. And so that's, mm-hmm. instead of staying away from
right.
those places.
That's a good point.
Very good point. This is evidence-based. So, and I'm always happy to be down there. It's a beautiful place.
Yeah, when we first came to town, my husband and I took a walk down the Big Ditch all the way to the end of San Vicente and all that, uh-huh. and we came across a homeless camp,
yeah,
you know, and
yeah.
it was a couple of women, actually, and then a couple of yeah. men, and, you know, there was a moment where we were like, oops, I guess we shouldn't, but it's so beautiful,
yeah.
you know, it's this time of year and everything, I guess we shouldn't have done this and everything, but they came out and talked to us, yeah. with us, and... It turned out to be, you know, just
yeah.
talking with people from Silver City, and we were newcomers exactly. and we didn't know anything about the place. And so they
right.
were talking to us and everything.
Yeah.
And we went on with our walk.
Yeah, exactly.
You know,
getting the fear out of the way. And I realize that's easier for some people than others, depending on their past experiences. Yeah, you know, just waving. I love living in this community where we greet each other on the sidewalk, mm-hmm. constantly greeting people I don't know, or maybe I have known in the past and I can't remember their name mm-hmm. or whatever, but I greet everybody, and I make a point if I see somebody I'm pretty sure is homeless, it's kind of a giveaway if they're carrying around all their belongings
right.
in a shopping cart or mm-hmm. backpacks. I make a point of going up to people and it's been 100% successful for me, and saying, hi, I'm Barbara. How are you doing today? Can I sit down here with you? And in general, people's faces light up and talk. I remember one guy said to me, you know, I haven't talked to anybody in a very long time.
It was
heartbreaking.
It is heartbreaking.
Yeah.
I saw a guy with a book. I'm always asking, when I see someone with a book, I get really excited. I'm a big reader, right? Because no one reads anymore. And I'm like, oh, I was going to say, what are you reading? So I saw this homeless person sitting on a bench, you know, with a book. So I walked over and went, what are you reading? And he has this paperback in his hand, and I was really excited and everything. And he goes, and he shows it to me. I said, I'm reading the Bible. And it was a paperback version, which I've never seen in my life before. It looked really like a, you know, trade paperback book, like a novel or something. And it was the Bible. And I said, well, all right. Well, all right.
I know.
You know, and he said, you know, he said, have a good day, sister. You know, and that was so, you know. People are people.
We're all people. That's the bottom line.
I would like to shift our focus to some national rhetoric that we've been hearing about homeless folks. And, you know, the Trump administration has said that homeless people should be rounded up, particularly in Washington, D.C. We've had high profile Fox News hosts say that homeless people should be euthanized. And so this is very dehumanizing rhetoric around this population. And I would like to, you know, let's talk about how do we push back against this rhetoric? How do we change hearts and minds about this vulnerable population? I mean, this interview is a good start, but how can we further that effort?
That's an excellent question and a very important question. One time when someone, a local well-known citizen here in Silver City, I brought him on a tour, and it went really well. And at the end of the tour, he asked me that very question. He said, what do you think is the most, he asked, what do you think is the most important thing to happen here in Silver City to improve things? And I said, for people to open their hearts and minds to our vulnerable populations. And yeah, I don't know how to do that, but I think we do it one person at a time. That rhetoric that you're talking about, I don't listen to Fox News. I don't listen to hardly any news now because it upsets me. But my husband does. And then I say, you just tell me if there's anything I need.
Oh, my husband does the same thing.
Yeah.
So you just tell me. You filter it and you just tell me what's going on. It's like, oh, so I have to say it twice.
But I mean, that's horrific what you're talking about. That's really disturbing. Again, I'm glad to live in a community where maybe there's people here that think like that, of actually euthanizing, as in murdering people. That's horrible. But I do think connecting with each other. You and I spoke a little earlier about how, you know, we live in a very politically polarized environment right now, and I'd like to see us begin to come together. There's very many good people in this country who don't agree on everything in politics. And guess what? We're a free country, and we get to disagree, and we get to voice our opinions. We have freedom of speech. We have freedom of gathering. And so with this rally that, you know, the No Kings rallies that have gone on have been very positive, completely nonviolent, completely promoting
community,
community and protecting our democracy, which I think some people don't understand that's what it's about. But I'd like to be able to talk directly with some of those people in a mode of just listening to each other. Let's hear each other out. Let's stop being so judgmental. I remember seeing a sign at that rally, and I've seen a bumper sticker too, make America kind again.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah.
It reminds me of a scene with our former president, Joe Biden. He was giving a speech, and somebody came in and started heckling him.
Yeah.
And immediately the security came, and they were not gentle. And he said, no. Let him stay.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Wow.
He has a right.
Yeah.
Let him, and more than once this happened. And so this is what you're talking about. So we have to listen. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Did you guys hear about the agitator at the No Kings rally and the peacekeepers? Offered him snacks and waters and, asked him if he was okay, if he needed anything, and killed him with kindness.
That's not the whole story, sweetheart. Oh. No, I mean, this is where we both sides have something to learn. They actually surrounded him and yelled at him and told him to go home.
Mm.
And he had I was right there. Oh. He had some of them might have offered him food and kindness and everything. I'm not saying you're wrong. But what I saw was they told him to go home. And I was like, that's wrong. He has every right to be here.
To express his opinions.
And he was filming people and they didn't want to be filmed. Mm. But he had still. And we have discussed it. And that's part of the de-escalation thing is to not engage. Mm-hmm. Right? Because he has every right. He was not harming anyone.
Mm-hmm.
He was not violent. He wasn't really doing anything. He was being rude. I mean, that he was filming people, right? And they didn't want to be. But he had every right to be there.
Mm-hmm.
So then there you have it. There you have the two responses. One here, share my picnic with me. You have every right, mm-hmm. welcome. And the other one is go home.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, again, fear.
Fear, right.
Fear can...
Fear. And anger, that taking out on one individual.
Yeah.
You are listening to Gila Mimbres Community Radio, KURU 89.1 FM in Silver City, New Mexico, and online at KURU89.1.org. You are listening to the Equity Hour, where the political is personal. And we are interviewing Dr. Barbara Mora, retired pediatrician and volunteer at SPIN, supporting people in need. And I also want to... say that, how do we talk about, we're talking about how do we change hearts and minds? And for me, something that I've learned and something that I've grown from, I used to think that, I couldn't be friends with or build any kinds of relationships with people who were on the opposite end of the political spectrum from me. And I've really changed my mind about that. And I see so much value in spending time and building relationships with people who think differently than you. And I think that's how we heal this division, right? Having conversations, becoming friends with people who have different political beliefs than you, who, voted for a different candidate than you, that you don't understand why people would do that. You build these connections, and that's how we heal this such divisiveness that we see in our country right now,
mm-hmm.
and in our communities,
and sometimes you're forced into it, like in a work situation.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Like my husband and I worked in Colorado in a Lutheran facility, and he's Jewish, right? It wasn't always easy,
mm-hmm.
and it was 99% Republican, and we were Democrats along with like two or three of the other residents. We never thought about it. It didn't come up, because we were working with people and we knew them as people. And I was teaching and they were coming to my classes. I didn't know who was a conservative and who was a liberal until after a while I did. But it didn't enter into the conversation or the working relationship. It wasn't part of, it just wasn't part of the scene. And that's kind of how we have to get back there. Because
mm-hmm.
this is 2000, we left in 2016, so this is how the country has changed in the past 10 years. So I always know who everybody is now. I don't want to find out, but it's there. Everybody puts it out there. This is what I am.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's like, well, actually, I don't really care.
Mm-hmm.
I just want to get to know you, and if that comes up, then we'll talk and we'll listen and everything. But it's not the first thing. Does it have to be the first thing?
Yeah.
No. But sometimes we get into our bubbles, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like of just being around people who think and believe like we do. And mm-hmm. I think it's important to be open to extending our bubbles a little bit.
Yeah. Or Or a lot, or popping the bubbles, maybe.
Yeah.
Or looking at inside the bubble is the same thing that's going on outside the bubble, actually.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, you know, not all conservatives are bad. Not all liberals are really great people
exactly.
either. And so sometimes what happens in the bubble is the same thing that's happening outside of it.
Yeah.
So with the people in the bubble, like the critics of spin, I have only heard critics of spin in my personal experience from liberals. And so this is right, and then what? And in a very insulting way.
Yeah, I know.
And shocking, really. You know, and in venues that are very liberal, like the Lotus Center. It happened to me once. I was like, and I didn't say anything because I couldn't. I was so surprised.
Right.
So we are not so different.
Yeah.
You know.
No.
We are not so
different. We need to all stop being self-righteous.
Yes.
And stop
and judgmental.
Yeah.
And
you know. And I should say within spin, we are not. We don't identify with one political party or the other.
Right.
We have among board members. Board members and staff, Republicans, Democrats, independents, people who choose not to vote. We have not every religious group on planet Earth, but most,
pretty
I think.
Good
we
representation.
Have Catholics
yeah.
and many denominations of Protestants, Jewish, and some Buddhists. Well, I'm including volunteers here too. And that's wonderful. Diversity is good.
Yeah.
You know, and so we don't sit around talking politics, and we all, you know, board members, staff, volunteers, we're just all working together and doing good work and taking care of each other and of people. As my husband Mitch says, this is the politics of compassion, that's what brings us together. And yeah, we're not going to agree on everything. I'm sure the three of us here don't agree on every
absolutely
issue.
Absolutely not.
And I'd love to just talk with people. Let's talk about the issues, where we agree, where we disagree. How did we come to those feelings? Let's just have conversations and listen to each other. I have many good friends here who, you know, I've been here 40 years. Who think very different from me and definitely identify politically differently, and we're still good friends, and we still take care of each other. We don't talk politics much.
Yeah.
We talk about grandkids, and we talk about when are we going to get together again. And so maintaining those whether it's family ties, because there have been so many families in this country ripped apart
right.
by political leanings.
Right.
It's such
exactly.
a shame.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And even if you do talk about politics, you know, there's this thing, as you know, Barbara, called active listening, where you know about that too, Renee. And so I just learned about it recently. It's a fancy name for just actually listening without judgment. But, you know, like I was teaching a poetry workshop the other day, and this guy came up with this whole slew of like these political opinions that were really horrifying. You know, really horrifying. And yet he was a wonderful person. He came to the workshop. He did really good work. And I listened for the positive, right? I listened to, I was listening. I was like, okay, I'm going to learn something here. I'm just going to listen to all this stuff and let something rise to the surface for me. Even though I disagree with all this other stuff, there's got to be something because we're two human beings sitting here at the table at this and writing about democracy. I mean, he came to write about democracy, so it's got to be in there somewhere. Maybe, maybe not, but something juicy is going to come to the surface. And it did. And he taught me something, you know, and he taught me something. And it was really an important thing to learn. And I'm grateful. But my first, you know, it just the hackles on the back, you know, I was just like rose. And I was like, how can I do this, you know, as the leader of this workshop?
Yeah.
And so I just listened, you know, waiting.
It's powerful.
For something to come to me that I could embrace and interact with.
Yeah.
You know, and it came.
Yeah.
And maybe
wonderful.
It always does come. If you
take
the time to wait and listen, say, okay, we're really different about this, this, and this. But then he taught me something very, very important.
Yeah.
Which I had never thought of in my life and never would have, I don't think.
Yeah. And we always have more to learn. As long as we you know, have the humility to realize mm-hmm. that we don't know everything and that we shouldn't be judging ever. Mm-hmm. Kit and I often talk about books a lot because we both love to read. So the
fanatical.
One I'm in the middle of now that one of my sons recommended is called The Righteous Mind. It's by Jonathan Haidt, H-A-I-D-T, and he's a PhD moral psychologist. He's done extensive research, and it says, so The Righteous Mind is the title, and it's how good people can be so divided in politics and religion. And so that's the topic. Yeah. I highly recommend it. I'm in the middle of the book now and realizing it's really giving me a lot of insight into how people come to believe the way they do. There's so much that's cultural and their backgrounds, but it's really insightful. So there's another book we'll share.
Okay.
You just have few minutes left.
Okay.
Do you want to bring the conversation back to how the community can support SPIN?
Yes. Thank you. SPIN is always in need of donations from gently used clothing, especially seasonal clothing. Like right now, we need winter jackets, hoodies, long sleeve shirts, gloves, hats, shoes, and boots. And then, of course, during the summer, it's different clothing. And our clients get these clothing for free. And then our laundry, wonderful staff member, Tomas, they're always clean. It's always organized in there. And we can always use new underwear, men's and women's underwear, especially socks. We can always use toilet paper in all of our sites and hygiene items.
So shampoo,
towels. You know, we accept used towels also that are in reasonable shape. Our garden can often use equipment too. And again, even furniture. If people want to donate money, which is always useful, it's expensive to run the homeless shelter especially. It's expensive, especially with staff. You know, we pay our staff and we always have staff there. You can make donations through the website, spinhousingnm.org, or through SPIN's Facebook page. Or if you want to mail a check, if you're old school like me, you can mail a check to P.O. Box 325, Silver City, New Mexico, 88062.
Well,
and if you want to volunteer, or if you want to go on a tour, they're now adding it to our website that you can go to. There'll be a contact where you can find out how you can sign up for a tour, and I will personally get back to you. And we now have one of our board members, our newer board member, is our volunteer coordinator. So there are many opportunities to volunteer.
That's helpful.
Yeah, whether it's in the kitchen, if you have your food handler's certification, you can actually help make the lunch and dinner that's provided there every day, 7 days a week. Or you can help in our laundry room. You can help out in the gardening. There's very many ways to volunteer.
And at the horse ranch.
Yeah, right? And at the horse ranch, yes. Yeah. That's the most fun one.
Well, we have about a minute and a half left. Any closing thoughts?
Well, I just want to thank you for inviting me to speak on behalf of SPIN. I'm passionate about this work that's being done. And I love connecting with other people who share this passion.
Well, thank you for coming on the show. It's been a great conversation. I think I've learned a lot from you. And I want to thank our listeners for tuning in.
Yeah, and I want to thank you both for this experience because, you know, it's not just for the listeners. It's for them primarily, but for us. Mm-hmm. We learn, as Renee said, and a lot doing this, and we are changed, and hopefully we can do a better and better job here at the Equity Hour because of people like Barbara Mora.
Oh, you two are doing a great job. I'm so proud of you.
Thank you.
Thank you.